Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, we have a busy show this week. It is that time of year where film sociology turns into stage sociology because of Indie Bard Fest coming up. And full disclosure, I'm acting in one of the productions. I'm playing Corin in As You Like It. But we had a roundtable discussion with some of the folks from As You Like It, as well as a gentleman from Troilus and Cressida. And we'll replay that in a little bit. But first off, raising a glass to actor Michael Gambon, who passed away this week at the age of 83, I believe. Obviously best known for playing Professor Dumbledore, replacing the ailing Richard Harris in the Harry Potter series, but a full career. This is one of those that I tell young acting students, you know, in England, it didn't matter. It was stage, screen, television, work was work. And Michael Gambon's credits go all the way back to 1965 as a senator, a soldier, and a cripiot in Laurence Olivier's version of Othello, the one where I think he looks like Ozzie Davis. So, yeah. So, yeah, we're going to do some scrolling here. He obviously worked a lot in England. I'm trying to remember what the first America or first film he made that got some notice in the United States. And it's probably the 1986 miniseries, The Singing Detective. He was the one who starred in the original version of that, except no substitutes. Films like The Rachel Papers. The first thing I think I noticed him in was The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, and A Dry White Season, all in 1989. Pretty good. Started Mobsters in 1991, Toys in 1992. Clean Slate, The Browning Version, A Man of No Importance, Mary Riley. Mary Riley's so bad, but he's good at it. The Gambler, Dancing at Lunasa. The Insider, that's right, he was in The Insider. Sleepy Hollow, Endgame, High Heels and Low Lifes, Christmas Carol, the movie, Gosford Park, Charlotte Gray. Yes, he was the Prime Minister in Ali G in the House. Open Range, great villain role in the Kevin Costner, Robert Duvall Western Open Range from 2003. Angels in America, uncredited. Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow, there's the editor. Always, that's worth checking out. Being Julia, Layer Cake, which I know is a favorite for a lot of people, where he played Eddie Temple. The Life Aquatic. The remake of The Omen, Nobody's Perfect. Amazing Grace, The Good Shepherd. The Baker, not the one that just came out. Brideshead Revisited, the 2008 one. One of the voices in The Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Book of Eli, The King's Speech, or he's King George V. Was in the series Luck, which I still need to need to visit, actually. I have not seen that. I know it sucked that a lot of horses died on that series, but I heard it was still pretty solid. Let's see. Yes, he was Uncle Pazuzu in Paddington. I got to tell the kid that. Hail Caesar is the narrator. Of course, he played Winston Churchill in 2016. Let's see. Oh, Victoria and Abdul, Paddington 2, of course, we mentioned. Kingsman, The Golden Circle. Judy, that's right. Johnny English Starts Again. And his last credit, 2019's Cordelia. So quite the career. Here's to you, Michael Gambon. All right. Because of the show, because of As You Like It, I've been kind of off the movie grid, sort of. However, I know a bunch of movies opened this weekend, but I had a movie, I had a cinematic experience that more people should have, and I hope I get more of these. And it happened Tuesday night. So for whatever reason, my rehearsal schedule for As You Like It is Sunday, Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So we had Tuesday off. And as you as I mentioned recently on the show, we had Robert Muggy, the documentary filmmaker, who had his documentary Cool Runnings, the reggae movie, was down at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin. I was sadly not able to make that because of rehearsal. However, the night before, the Art Craft Theater had a screening of the Lamberto Bava horror film Demons with live music from the band Goblin, or in this case, Claudio Simonetti's Goblin. This is the progressive rock band from Italy, best known for this film scores for the films of Dario Argento, including Suspiria, among others. And I had had one other experience like this where, the title always eludes me, but I was able to take my kid to the Music Box Theater in Chicago. It was Blues Fest weekend, so probably, 2011? No, 2013. Anyway, but they had the one and only silent movie that Gloria Swanson and Rudolph Valentino appeared in together with live organ accompaniment. So, and I know that the Hilbert Circle Theater has been really cool over the last few years of screening a movie with the ISO performing under it. So to have a kind of, a rock version of this with Goblin, a 3-4-piece, and I had never been to the Art Craft. All these years, I feel bad I had not been to the Art Craft Theater, and now I have, and it's worth the trip. It's only 30 minutes south here of Indianapolis, and there's a really fun bar and grill right next door, and I'll share the story. I got down there. The doors opened at 7. The movie was going to start at 8. I got down there at 6. And I was trying to figure out where I was going to eat. And there was a restaurant, a bar and grill right next to it. And found a parking space across from the theater. Because street parking, I believe, was done at 6. And there was one guy waiting at the door. And I was like, okay. So I went in, had dinner, and was wearing my red Blackula t-shirt with the poster on it. That caught a lot of eyes, especially from the bartender who said, are you going to the movie next door? And had to explain to her what was going on. So by the time I was done with dinner, there was a line around the block. I was able to get a ticket. And that was the other thing. I had told my wife, I didn't buy it in advance. I didn't go online. I actually wanted to go to the ticket window. And I figured I could get a seat and see the movie, and if they were sold out, I'd go home. But I got to drive down to Franklin, which is a nice little area. So, and there is a tribe of black t-shirts of either rock bands or horror films, and a few thumbs up from the community for the Blackula shirt. I was proud of that. And so we get in, and it seats about 700. I'm going to say it was about 2/3 full. And the great thing about this kind of experience is, and with cult cinema, is we're a small group or a group that is passionate about an experience, and everybody's really cool with each other. Everybody's really nice to each other. There was one group near the back that maybe gabbed a little bit, and there was one person who asked them in a crass way to stop talking. But other than that, everybody was there for the same purpose and really cool about it. So, it's a little more comforting and cozy compared to just going to a random screening of whatever film is out there. And the other thing that surprised me was how it wasn't as loud as I thought it was going to be because of the band. No mics on the drums, which was a wise move, and then obviously very keyboard heavy. But it was fun, and it's the film itself, Demons, is imagine Dawn of the Dead, but instead of a mall, it's done in a movie theater. So they're trapped in a movie theater with these, as the website, as IMDb refers to them, ravenous demons. Not a zombie film, but a demon film. So, yeah, 90 minutes. It's because it's an Italian horror film. It's it's a little cheaper looking, and the acting because of the dubbing also not the greatest, but the special effects and the gore are a little more crass and a little more over the top, and it works. It was fun. Oh yeah, the Dario Argento presents. Remember, friends, when it says presents, it means they're either producing or they're endorsing or both. So. My mistake on that earlier, but Lamberto Bava is, I forgot, the son of Mario Bava, the filmmaker, and his grandfather, Eugenio, was a cameraman in Italy. Anyway, so they played the whole music score of Demons, and then did about a 30-minute medley of other music from other films that they'd worked on, that Goblin had worked on, like Suspiria, Deep Red, I think Bird with the Crystal Bloomage. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a movie and a concert at the same time. So, and I hope they get more of these down there. And if you get a chance to see Goblin performing, you should do that. And it was fun. And it was a nice long line for merch afterwards. So, yeah, I hope we get more movies with live musical accompaniment of all kinds of genres. It just adds a little, it makes a unique evening at the movies. So hope you get to check that out. And yeah, once again, head down to the Historic Art Craft Theater when you get a chance. All right, thank you for that. Let's shift gears, and you're going to hear a chat that I had recently with some of my co-stars and the young gentleman from Troilus and Cressida. Enjoy. Well, friends, it's one of those times of year where film sociology turns into stage sociology, because we are here to talk about some shows that are coming to your neck of the woods, and not just the As You Like It woods. Indie Bard Fest is happening, and I have guests in studio that are going to tell us about some of the shows that are coming around. So sign in with who you are and what you do at Indie Bard Fest.
My name is Ryan Shelton. I play Touchstone in As You Like It and also the artistic director behind the show.
My name is Connor Phelan. I play Orlando, and I'm also the Mud Creek Associated producer for the show.
Hi there. I'm Kay Bayshell, and I play Silvius in As You Like It.
Hi, I'm Jack T, and I play Troilus in Troilus and Cressida.
Okay, so everybody memorize those voices. Also, sitting on the bench in here, in case questions need to be answered that we don't know, Glenn Dobbs, who's been one of the usual suspects here at Film Sociology, he will chime in if need be. So, so how we doing, gang? How's your shows? And by the way, full disclosure, I'm playing Corin in As You Like It, another reason why we're here. So how are things in the woods?
Well, you know, you took my speech. I was going to say the show's going so well because the actor playing Corin is amazing. That's where I was going to start.
Stop it.
Absolute star.
Stop it. I know the song is about me, but thank you. So actually, I want to start with not odd man out, but how are things going with Troilus and Cressida?
They're going great, sir. We are looking at a really incredible set. It's very out there. We have a campfire out of a toilet because we've set our show.
Whoa. Yeah, hold
on. You can't
on.
Just go by that.
In a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Ah, see, that was going to be the next question is, what's the setting? So post-apocalyptic Troilus and Cressida. Now the campfire in a toilet. Nope. There's
a staple of
Do not mention certain restaurants. You can't do that. So... I'm sorry, continue, sir.
I would call it a staple of the Greek camp. We have our set designed in a way where Troy is predominantly on stage right and Greece is stage left. So we have a tent and a campfire indicating the Grecian camp, and Troy is set up in mostly the interior of a castle. So we have some really interesting costume and set pieces put up to really convey this idea of the Trojan War in a modern setting. Okay. A trash modern setting. It's destroyed. It's rubble.
Okay. And could you enlighten the folks? Because this is one of the lesser-known ones of the canon, but give us a synopsis of Troilus and Cressida, please.
Well, it's devastating to me that it is lesser-known because it's my favorite Shakespeare play. So Troilus and Cressida is set during the backdrop of the Trojan War, where we have the story of Hector and Achilles going on in the background, but Hector has a younger brother, Troilus, and Troilus has fallen madly, deeply, truly in love with a woman, Cressida, the daughter of Calchas. Calchas defected to the Greeks, and Cressida is set to follow him. So the course of the play follows Troilus and Cressida's tumultuous love story as she is traded away to the Greeks and struggles with her faith to him, which he is insistent upon. And it becomes a little bit of a love triangle. There's a great deal of bloodshed. I wouldn't say as much as Titus or anything, but we're pretty much following...
We'll get to Titus in a minute.
We're following a enraged young man whose brother is the hero of Troy, and Troilus is really just trying to get his girl back.
And his groove back.
Our work here is done. You're amazing.
Yeah, you just jumped right in. So, no, I'm curious, why, not just because of the production, I'm sure it was before this, but why is this your favorite Shakespeare?
Ooh, I am a huge classics fan. I read the Iliad the first time when I was very, very young. I have always been super fond of stories with a huge cast of characters who all have conflicting motives that come together, and this is a phenomenal example. Troilus's right-hand man, Cressida's uncle, Pandarus, he has an interest that conflicts directly with almost all of the Greeks. Ulysses, who comes up with the plan to bring Cressida to Greece. Diomed, who is in line with Ulysses until he isn't. And every single character bolsters the others while still finding some way to drag them down with them as they all make mistake after mistake. And you never really know how to root for in this show.
Whoa, someone makes a mistake in a Shakespeare show?
No.
Only a
unheard of.
I believe that's known as a plot point, I think. So, Pandarus, is that the Greek god of lowest common denominator?
Oh, that was good.
Right? There's the other ones I can't do just yet, even though it's podcast. So, all right, we're very good. And for the record, friends, your production of Troilus and Cressida, non-musical.
Thankfully, okay, I would not.
No, I just want to be clear. We just want to say I'm going to say a gentle hello to the there was a musical production of Troilus and Cressida earlier this year. So a gentle hello to them. A gentle hello to the other As You Like It that's happening elsewhere. So you know we're all kind and friendly.
Let me just say, I'm certainly glad I don't have to sing.
Oh, Pierce Brosnan is also your vocal coach. I'm with you, man. I'm with you on that one. So, okay. So, As You Like It, that's the four of us, and we're in the forest. Tell the story.
It is lots of stories of falling in love and being displaced.
And no bloodshed.
And no bloodshed. It really is...
if you give Phoebe half a chance.
Yeah, I'm... I do a scene with the actress playing Phoebe as Audrey, and I'm always worried she's going to lash
She'll
out.
She'll throw a punch at
you. Yeah.
No, anyway.
But it really is. So basically, Rosalind escapes into the forest from her mean uncle who's taken over things. And people, and she's dressed as a man because, again, it's Shakespeare.
So when you put on a cap, you're a dude.
Yeah. I mean, we've done enough Shakespeare. Like, this is the one with the silly clown they go out in the forest, right? Like, because they're always going to dress as a guy. That doesn't help.
And clowns and forests. Yeah. So.
It's really the quintessential Shakespeare comedy, right? Mistaken identity, falling in love, violence, phallic jokes. What more could you want?
Yeah. It's got a little touching part in the idea that even when you don't have what you want or you're displaced from life, that you can find camaraderie and love. I mean, there is a more deeper core to it, but it's a lot of slapstick and fun to get there.
And we don't have a campfire, therefore we don't have a toilet. But, you know, we'll make the most of it because it's out in the woods. So, now, this is a cutting that you did?
I did. I got to do As You Like It in college, and I got six lines in college. So I thought the next time I do As You Like It, I want more lines.
You're damn right you are. Where'd you go to school?
Hanover College.
Hello, Hanover.
So that was a few years ago. And we did a Depression-era version of it for Shakespeare in the Park in Noblesville with a circus and some singing. So we're looking for a little bit of a different take. And so we've kind of set this as a Commedia dell'arte troupe that's traveling. And in my brain, they've been traveling since the Renaissance, and they just kept traveling till today.
Didn't they do a show at Elsinore Castle just to mess with the king?
Oh yeah, we've been everywhere in my mind at least.
That's right. Thank you, Player King. That's nice there. So, and is this your first Shakespeare?
No, this is my third.
Oh, third. Sorry,
my
sorry.
Third year in Bardfest.
So, full disclosure, I've known Connor since he was a wee lad.
back before he had facial hair. And he's worked with me on – he helped me with a production of Trip the Bountiful that was done at Mud Creek Players 1,000 years ago. And 1,050 years ago, he was at the camp that I co-directed with my lovely wife.
I was the original Barn Rat. Thank you very
much. You were the original Barn Rat. So, yeah, what a tangled web we have here. So.
Indeed, indeed. I can't escape you, can I?
And you can't just quit me either. So
no,
there's that.
I really can't. I really can't.
There is that. So, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm hanging out with friends. So, and you have a cap. See,
I do. Yeah, I had to take it off to put the headphones on. Unfortunately, so you're seeing my awful hair.
Oh please, just stand next to me. You'll be just fine. What is your history before this? What was your history with As You Like It?
I had never performed it. I think I had never read it through. I saw it performed once by Indie Shakes a couple years ago. But
sorry, there was a microphone off mic scoff by somebody, and we say hello to them. They're friendly. We like them. Hi.
Quiet in the house.
My day job involves arts grants. We love Indie Shakes.
Yes,
too.
They are. Oh, this is a legitimate way to say. For proper use, there are good people on both sides.
The more Shakespeare, the better.
That's thank you. Yes. Anyway, continue, please.
Oh yeah, no, that was pretty much it. Honestly, I had only seen it once before I auditioned, but luckily it's been a blast being a part of it, and some very talented people.
Nice. So, I want to start. We'll get back to Troy's in a little bit. So this is a first time collaboration between Indie Bard Fest. Where can people go for more information about Indie Bard Fest?
IndieBardFest.com.
So.
.com.
Not edu. .com.
Not net.
Nope.
And that's INDY. Everyone local should know that.
BARD. Bard. Fest.com.
Thank you.
That's tickets for all the shows, though, not just Troilus and Cressida and As You Like It. So there's tons of good stuff.
There is. But this is the first time collaboration between Mud Creek Players and Indie Bard Fest.
It is. We're very
so
excited.
You're the representative, so you got to make sure we don't leave the water running and
that's right.
The ghost lights on and
yeah, tragedy strikes if that ghost light doesn't get turned on every night.
I understand. So how are things with the Mud Creekers having us invade their space?
Oh, it's not an invasion. It's great. We're actually we're really happy to have you guys here. We look at this as an opportunity to get some fresh faces in the theater, and our hope is that you guys...
Wait, fresh faces? I'm in the show. What are you talking about?
Yeah. We look at it as an opportunity to get some fresh faces in the theater, and we hope that you guys see how much fun it is to do a show at Mud Creek Players, and we're hoping to reach a whole new audience with Bardfest. We're really stoked about this, particularly because we've sort of launched some initiatives to try to not only entertain, but sort of enrich our community as well.
Yes.
And that very much aligns with Bardfest's goals of making theater more accessible. And that's something I actually really appreciate about As You Like It, is I think a lot of people hear Shakespeare like, oh, that's going to be so stuffy. I'm not going to know what's going on. And as I've been in rehearsal, I'm just like, oh my God, no, this is hysterical. It's sarcastic. It's witty.
It's us.
It's us. So, there's dirty jokes. It's hilarious.
Talking a little philosophy.
Yes, we do have the Smothers Brothers Punts and Judy moment when we're up there, but also known as the sexiest scene in the play.
Oh yeah, it's worth whatever. What are tickets? 20?
Yep,
like it's worth just seeing. Matt
we,
and I,
we, yeah. we don't discuss prices, but yeah, yeah. But tipping is optional.
Tipping
but anyway,
is
op- there's
I do say
it's going to turn into a Tom Jones concert when we get up there.
We do sell popcorn, and if you want to throw it at...
No, it's not the melodrama the kids do in the summer. Shut up. Anyway, continue.
No, please. I was going to say, coming from the outside a little bit, Bardfest and Mud Creek are such welcoming things. I think the very best of theater, when we're trying to make a community for lots of people to play, to not only be in shows but to see things, and it's great. Mud Creek has opened their doors wider than they had to make us feel welcome.
A little self... self-grandstanding and full disclosure, I was a part of Mud Creek Players for quite a while. My family, my wife and her parents were old community theater warhorses over at Mud Creek Players. My wife grew, and her brother grew up there. Our kid grew up there. My wife and I did a theater camp, their theater camp Barn Rats for 10 years and got this miscreant, among others, out into the world.
That is an apt description.
I've been directed by both my in-laws at Mud Creek Players. My mother-in-law, Mame, directed my father-in-law and I and our lawyer, Jerry Burton, in a production of The Sunshine Boys.
Good Lord.
I was the nephew. Yeah, that was something. And, well, and it was a reunion. It was a year, and I know it's coming up, that when it's a big anniversary, they kind of revisit some of the old favorites. And this time around, Jerry and Bill were at least old enough to play the characters the first time around of The Sunshine Boys.
I
so,
miss Bill.
So there is that. I do miss Bill. And then Leanne directed – no, Bill directed me in Avanti many, many years ago. So yeah. So there was that. And then I directed two shows there, Three Musketeers, which had my kid in it, and then A Trip to Bountiful with the great Gene Adams, among others.
God,
and
she's so wonderful.
Yeah. And still anyway, and still kicking.
One
still
thing I
want
to ask is
yes.
Oh, my gosh. I just forgot what I was going to say.
Which is perfect for a recording.
I know.
So once
Gene
when
Adams.
I was yeah. Once when I was in college, so no.
Well, I'll just slide in with the obligatory.
Please.
As Matthew Sosi mentioned, our 75th anniversary is coming up. So
you opened the door.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We are the longest standing community theater in Indianapolis, and we would love to meet you.
Has the season been announced yet?
No, not yet. We're working on it.
Yeah, I know. I saw the whiteboard with the hundreds of titles that we never see the light
listen,
of day.
Listen, let me get through October. I'll have me back. We'll talk, all right?
Okay, all right. So where is Troilus and Cressa being done?
We are performing at the Cat Theater in Carmel, which is a very nifty venue.
Yes, it is.
A little bit of a hybrid, I would say, between a black box and your traditional theater.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have, directed, I had the same, what I call, it makes it sound like a jazz band, the Virginia Woolf Quartet. but they first did a Plaza Suite because we had the space and a grant and time, and you needed to get out of the theater, out of the house after COVID.
Hey, that's my favorite version of that show I've ever seen.
Seriously?
I really enjoyed that.
Oh.
A lot.
Thank you. Hi, welcome to Self-Gratization Sociology. No, and then we did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf there, and then Lysistrata there. So, yeah, it's a nice small spot. There's plenty of places to eat and drink before and after. So, cool. How do you like the space?
I love it. It's a super, super vibrant area to be in, and the interior has some awesome seating the audience is going to love. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a few characters who are going to be going through the audience for exits. It is...
Don't give the whole festival away.
Yeah, yeah. Quite.
No, I'm going to paraphrase. There's a great Onion article, and it basically says, oh, crap, actors are leaving the stage.
certainly the reaction we would like to invoke with that.
Nice.
But it's an awesome place. It's a very deep stage, allows for a lot of movement and some really interesting ways to pull focus to characters that are giving speeches or soliloquies while others are still on stage.
Yeah, we should try that.
Yeah, we should.
Is it too late to change the whole show?
No, it's nice when you play a character that can just talk to the audience whenever he feels like it.
Kind of true. Yeah, there is that. So, and where can people find out more about Troilus and Cressida?
If people are interested in finding out more about Troilus and Cressida, they are welcome to go to indiebardfest.com.
There you go. All right. So,
who trained this kid?
Yeah, where did you go to school?
Like high school?
Sure.
Well, I'm a full-time mechanic, but I went to high school in Tri-West, which is a very small little school out in Liston.
Okay, so you're a mechanic. What is your specialty? Do you have a specialty?
Nope.
PR, apparently.
So this
a
no,
I'm basically trained mechanic.
Where do you work? Which mechanic do you work at?
Ray Skillman's in Avon.
Hi guys, are they coming?
Some of them.
Cool.
They better.
Yeah, they better.
Put posters up in the shop.
No, this is the beauty because we everybody has a different path from how they got here. You know, when it comes to work, you know, you're at my work right now, so that happens. But no, that's very, very cool. All right, so the other shows that are going on, who can handle the other titles that are going on this season at Bardfest?
Go ahead. You can say you know some.
I'm most excited for is Bold Stroke for a Husband, directed by Max Andrew McCreary.
Our artistic director.
Yeah, our intrepid leader. I'm really excited for that show.
What do you know what it's about?
I do, vaguely.
Get ready, Glenn. We might need you. Let's vague book this.
Listen, it's been about a year since I read it, so Glenn might have to step in here.
Okay, let's get him ready.
Yeah. I know a little bit, but not much.
But basically, from what I understand, there was an Italian writer many, many moons ago who decided to take a more feminist stab at a Shakespearean
comedy.
At a comedy, and I have read through it back when Max was first workshopping the script, and it is really interesting, and I've heard some really cool things coming out of the cast members, and I'm really excited to see where they go with it.
Is he right, Glenn? come on over. Yeah, come on over.
Listen, I was prepared to talk about my show today.
Bold Trick for Husband is playing at one of our really pretty theaters, the Shelton Auditorium at Butler University.
Mm-hmm.
You can find tickets, like everyone else has said, at IndieBardFest.com. The show is a restoration comedy written by a female playwright who it is just kooky and crazy, gender changes and disguises and slapstick and just general buffoonery.
He looks at me when he says that. That's my favorite officer, general buffoonery.
It's just a great show, and it talks about themes of justice and themes of is the world right for women and the things that they have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... just a wonderfully fun show. It's just a discovery. You'll have a great evening at that show.
Very good.
Do you want me to go to the other one?
No, that's fine. So we have those. We have and I believe those are the lightest shows we have. Let's go. Let's turn to the dark side.
And then we have Hedda Gabler.
Yes. And when is that running? What is Hedda Gabler? You mentioned it. What's the story on that? You have no idea, but you brought it up.
This season, there's a lot of talk about, because we were talking about the directors, a little bit about agency and women taking some control. And so Hedda Gabler is kind of the quintessential modern beginning of modern theater where she makes decisions on her own. And it's the same thing with Medea. So Medea is another show.
Well, don't talk about making decisions on your own.
Yeah, and so Medea makes same thing. And then Rosalind has the biggest amount of lines in the Shakespeare canon for a woman. So it's really a season of that sort of agency, taking your own path, making a decision.
We're certainly playing that up in Troilus and Cressida, too. One of the characters, Thersites, who is typically played by a man, is being played by a woman in our production, and we are really focusing on Cressida and her options as she moves forward in life, rather than Troilus and his whining throughout the book.
Who whines more, him or Hamlet?
Ooh,
you can't beat Hamlet. You just really can't.
I might be biased here, but I really am going to say Troilus. I mean, every other line, it seems.
Hamlet's on for five more acts.
See, like, Hamlet's lines make up 40% of the script of Hamlet, and every line is just a whine.
Sylvius whines a little bit.
I mean, that's the whole point, though. I mean, you're a lover scorned. How do you not? Why?
Speaking of lover scorned, Medea is Euripides, not Perry. And it's that I'm excited to check that out. That was the
No,
we're not going to spoil it.
No. But that was also the second play I'd ever directed. I had done an adaptation of it down at Book Mama's back on the South Side with Jolene Mentink Moffat in the title role. So I'm excited to see a new version of that. We also have, because it's October, get your pie holes ready, Titus Andronicus.
When Matt Anderson was first talking about Titus Andronicus, I said, "What do you think?" And he just goes, "Blood."
There will
that was
be
his line,
there
yeah.
will be blood.
Ketchup
yeah.
packets galore.
Sadly, no Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, there is no Daniel Day-Lewis, and then I got to be in a production the second year of the Richmond Shakespeare Festival, and that's also a fun show. And then we were talking earlier about how, you know, shows kind of come and go in spurts. For instance, you know, the other shows we just mentioned, but about 7 or 8 years ago, there were my family and I got to see three productions of As You Like It in like 4 weeks because one was in Richmond, one was in Bloomington, one was in Evansville. And a year after doing Titus Andronicus, two more versions. There was one that was here and then one that was in Evansville by the same company. So, you know, it comes and goes. So I'm intrigued to see what Matt does with Titus.
This isn't the first time that Titus has been done for Bardfest, isn't it?
No, this is the first.
Oh, it is the first.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So.
Yeah,
that was Jamie McNulty and Kelly Gualdoni, who I got to direct. He was in that version here. So, now to be fair, you're gonna have to top our curtain speech done by Sammy Terry.
The laundry bill is usually the barrier to entry for Titus.
Yeah,
and
we did Midsummer and Titus. That was our marketing campaign. One for the family, one for the grown-ups, heaven, hell. And
it's the Barbenheimer of Shakespeare.
It kind of was. Thank you. But this, we had a giant, the plastic trash bins that schools have, and you just threw your clothes in there. It already had soapy water, and you just – and it was faster to clean – it was faster to, when you did Midsummer first – as opposed to the other way around. But yeah, a lot of stage blood in that. Well, we used it in that show. So anyway, I'm intrigued to see how they take the, how they handle it.
Speaking of Barbenheimer, I think it would actually be kind of – well, I think it would be interesting to kind of do that with Bardfest almost because you
– aren't we?
What I mean from you know
feeling
the ticket holder's perspective is you can really kind of run the gamut talking – you know. Hedda Gabler, Titus Andronicus, and Boltruck for Husband, you kind of run the gamut of women as sort of the primary antagonist, women as sort of the victim, and the kind of everything in between. And so we have very light shows and very heavy shows. I really didn't mean to malign Hedda Gabler. I've had the pleasure of seeing it. It's not this production, but it's pretty good. It's just, woof, Ibsen.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that's on the Criterion Channel. That's
uh-huh.
called It's just, woof, Ibsen.
But no, I really think it's a pretty apt description if you go from Boldstroke to Hedda Gabler to Titus.
So do you have an order and preference?
Because
that was because you speak of Barbenheimer, and we'll get to the film portion of the film show in a bit. But of you know which one do you see first? And I wasn't able to do both days. I was able to see we had a press screening on a Tuesday of Op, and then I went and saw Barbie on Wednesday. Although I sat in the second row, so I like to call it Attack of the 50-Foot Margot Robbie. I would like to direct that. But it was, you know, see, you get the heavy one out of the way first. The counter was, if the first film is so good, it's going to distract you while you're trying to watch Barbie. Has anybody had the Opera Barbie experience?
Well, to your second argument, I think Barbie is a superior film, so I don't think that holds any water. I'm also in the minority. A lot of people say Barbie first, then Oppenheimer. I'm the opposite. I want all the dread
up
front.
You need a little light.
And then I want the surreal absurdism following.
The problem with Oppenheimer is the same thing that happened in history happened in the movie. So if you've read books
there is education,
you kind of knew what was going to happen.
That is true.
I was surprised by Barbie is what I'm trying to say.
There you go.
Pleasantly so.
I don't know. Greta Gerwig got a pretty good track record.
You'll be pleasantly surprised by the entire lineup of Bardfest.
This guy!
Yes.
You can get your tickets on IndieBardFest.com.
Wow.
He is winning
Hire
so
this
far.
Man.
This kid's changing careers.
You're coming to every one of these from now on.
All right. So going around the horn, because y'all don't have enough to do, but what films have you watched recently since we started on that path a little bit? Theater camp.
You stole my answer
because that was
the last movie I saw.
There can be more than one answer. So
well, I won't say what I thought of it.
So I have not been – or I don't watch movies unless I can go to the theater. And
thank you. We appreciate that.
Now that I'm at rehearsal all the time, I can't go to the cinema. But, yeah, I think the last thing I saw was theater camp at the Can-Can, and wonderful film, hilarious. I was cackling. Everyone in the theater hated me because...
Why? Because you were laughing during a comedy?
It was nasty, gross laughing because I've been doing theater for over a decade.
Same.
Since I was little, and it is... If you just like theater or musicals or any, go see it. It's so funny. All the in-jokes are
well,
wonderful.
as one who has directed a camp, first off, I thank God you kids went home. I couldn't fathom being stuck in a location with y'all day and night. So there was, and probably vice versa, that to be fair. There's a lot of that stuff I could really appreciate. It's almost like if you took if you took camp, fame, and meatballs and kind of put them in a blender, that's the film theater camp. What else? What about the rest of you?
Recently, I think the last thing I saw at the Can-Can was Bottoms, which was pretty fun.
Uh-huh.
And then lately at home, we kicked off Spooky Season with 30 Days of Night because my partner had never seen it.
Right.
And then we watched 2015's The Invitation, which I had never seen. It's a wonderful little thriller.
Okay. All right.
That I couldn't quite see coming.
Nice. You haven't shown Aurora yet.
No. No. But that is on the list.
Is it really?
Believe it or not, I've got the notes in the Samsung app.
If you want to see actual human beings rub elbows and sometimes get knocked down by wild animals in Africa, there is a film called Roar.
I think they showed us the preview when I was at the Can-Can for this podcast, sponsored by the Can-Can, apparently.
Yeah.
When I was there for the Toxic Avenger, and it looked hysterical.
Yes. Yeah. It is.
I was trying to think. Last movie. It's time for a playoff baseball emote. So TV is all baseball. But I think the last movie I saw was Elemental.
Okay, very good.
The theater, at least. I'm
you enjoy it?
I watched quite a bit, actually, because it had such a poor review. I was no expectation. It was fun.
Okay.
I was touched by it.
Very cool.
Well, if we're talking about animated movies, I'm going to have to go with the 2006 blockbuster Pixar's Cars. I don't watch movies. But I have.
Glad you're here.
There's the door.
He nailed the earlier part.
No, you can't really beat a classic like Cars, can you?
Honestly, no. And the more you think Never about it, the more there is to think about.
Remember when Cars was the weakest of the Pixar films?
Isn't
I'm
it
glad
still?
I don't.
No, because I have never felt that way.
Piece of cinematic history.
Okay, all right.
It was my brother's favorite film growing up. I think I've seen that movie probably about at least 100 times.
I get it.
1,000.
Don't need two or three. sir, it is animated Doc Hollywood, and yeah, it's one of Paul Newman's last films, Sky Point. So, but I'm old and curmudgeon-y, so that happens. It's okay.
There's so much lore to Cars that you don't necessarily think about. I mean, they have a Cars Pope, implying Cars Catholicism and Cars Jesus. There's a Cars World War II veteran.
Yes,
there's a hippie,
and yes, and of course the Italian car voiced by Tony Shalhoub, always good. Always
oh,
like
Tony
that.
Shalhoub.
Do they have? Do you think they have like Indy Bardfest? I mean, they don't show Indiana. There's probably an Indy.
But they have Shakespeare, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They have to have Shakespeare. Like, what would As You Like or Toilets and Crescent look like with Cars?
I don't know, but you can go to IndyBardFest.com and give suggestions on how that goes.
Did you have an email there?
That's right. All right. this has been fun. I'm going to go around the horn once more. Do you have a favorite Shakespeare cinema, or Shakespeare film?
I'm so glad you asked that because
that's why I did. That's what it's the show.
No, I know. I'm a big Hamlet fan, and
which one? There's like
I know,
20
no, no.
versions.
I was about to say okay. Everyone always talks about the Kenneth Branagh version, but I'm David Tennant all the way. I think it was 2008 for the Royal Shakespeare Company.
So a screening, but not necessarily in the theater. But I get it.
Oh no, yeah,
but, yeah. It's what we now show live play. We play performances in the theater, but I get it. No. It's fine. Is that the one? Wait, is it Kieran Hines, Claudius, in that one? No, that's the Cumberbatch. Sorry.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
No, what made this one stand out compared to the others?
I just think there's a lot of. It was really artistically done. There's just some very. The way they play up some of the raunchy jokes, especially the jokes of it, because Hamlet is very, very funny.
When
not whiny. Or talking about death and philosophy, but. It was just
the duality of man.
Oh yeah, it was also I think one of the more emotionally charged Hamlets that I've seen. But that's
okay.
Yeah.
So I'll get back to the rest of the panel. But when Branagh's Hamlet opened, I saw it in Chicago. It's the one and only time I actually bought movie tickets over the phone. And to borrow a line from Dennis Miller, I'm not on the phone this long with friends contemplating suicide. There were rock concerts easier to get into. I mean, folks were jumping over seats and claiming the only thing missing were beach balls and lighters when the thing finally went down. So,
people say theater's a dying art form.
Well, that was 1996. So anyway, who's next?
I'm going to say, I got a few. You talked about most of the things I would have watched would have been film stage versions.
Sure.
But when I was younger, the Midsummer Night's film that came out Calista Flockhart? I don't
yes. know. Michael Hoffman's directed with, Kevin Kline and Michelle Pfeiffer.
I grew up in a place that would not have enjoyed Shakespeare, so things like that that were avenue out were great. But I love the version of Comedy Errors that Royal Shakespeare Company did with kids sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really clever. I thought that was a lot of fun. I saw that it was at the Public Theater with the lady from Game of Thrones. They did a gender switch with Oberon and Titania that I really liked.
Nice.
I thought that was really clever, and I thought there was one more, but it's always fun to just see how different they are, right?
I mean, exactly. Just, well, that's why I didn't mind seeing three As You Like It's in 4 weeks, because I knew they were going to be considerably different. The other thing, friends, if you're new to Shakespeare, the first 5 minutes you may feel like you're in the weeds, but it's behavior and plot lines that we're familiar with. That's why we're still doing these plays hundreds of years later. So just let it wash over you and just watch the people. And even if we're not asking you to translate the script at the end of the evening, just watch them and enjoy the show. I've got two more Shakespeare films.
No. Pick on me last, please.
Okay.
It's all right. I'll cover for him. So it's funny you bring that up, because we were just talking about how much we love Tim Roth and Gary Oldman. So if Shakespeare adjacent's allowed, again.
That's never stopped. Again, they haven't made a streaming series of Third Guard from the Left yet.
Yet.
But they will.
Give them time.
So Daisy Ridley was Ophelia, and you're going to bring up, I know, RNG.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Tim Roth, Gary Oldman, Richard Dreyfuss, Joram Mormont plays our Hamlet.
Yep.
I love that movie. But if we're talking strictly a Shakespeare adaptation, 2006 is She's the Man.
You looked at my phone where I pulled this up.
No, I didn't.
I'm literally looking at the Wikipedia
that's
page
a good,
right now.
Again, that's another great example of Shakespeare 101. Basically, Twelfth Night with Amanda Bynes, mm-hmm. back when she was wired okay. Better, maybe.
Well,
I don't know.
Talking about phones, I just looked up Shakespeare movies, and I'm going to go with my favorite is Safari Can't Open the Page Because Your iPhone Is Not Connected to the Internet.
That's a good one.
You know, how did you feel when sitting through Safari that first time?
I was floored by how well they related these ideas of nihilism that were prominent in Shakespeare's original work to the blank nothingness in the production.
Don't worry, Donnie. They're nihilists. They're cowards. It's okay. You're right there, Glenn?
I like that the young adults and Glenn are the ones that have their phones out.
These kids today.
You should see them at rehearsal.
Well, yeah, get in there, Glenn. We can't end. I'm sorry, we can't end on Safari. So.
I'm so glad you don't have to. To me, it's what got me started. Kenneth Branagh's Henry V.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I can watch that over and over again.
Yep,
love it.
So there you go. And that might be a preview of things to come. Fingers crossed. We'll see. Yes. Anyway, IndieBardFest.com. So come out, and there's plenty of theater to choose from. Is there an opportunity to do double features? Okay, so we have so you could do one or the other, depending on which one you want to. Do you want to start dark and end light, or vice versa? I think we have everything for you. Yes, Glenn.
In one location, they're right next to each other.
That's
in
right.
The one's in the Indy 11 Theater, and the other is in. The Basile Theater, there at the Indy Fringe Building. It's Medea and Titus, so it's a heck of a it is a heck of a double feature.
That's just Oppenheimer.
If you don't mind blood and a lot of violence, it's a great show.
But it's shorter. It's shorter than both. Yeah.
I got one piece of trivia. I always love this trivia.
Okay, all right.
I always love this trivia. Excuse me. During Shakespeare's time,
yes, sir.
We have evidence that his most popular play with the audience at the time was which play?
Titus.
It's Titus.
Oh my gosh.
Titus.
Yeah, for every Hamlet that was done, there were 400 blood and
gory.
And
they used real blood.
Yeah. It's true. Do we have a moment to hit the listeners with the dates for these shows real quick?
Yes. Well, yeah, man, go for it.
You have the dates? Because I know when our dates are.
The entire festival, I think, runs October 6th through November 12th, right? Yes, that is correct.
And both of our two shows, Troilus and Cressida and As You Like It, are the opening shows, the first weekend being the 6th through the 8th, and the second weekend being the 13th through the 15th of October. There's a Friday and a Saturday show at 7:30 and Sunday matinees at 3.
At Mud Creek, Friday and Saturday is at 8 p.m., and our matinee is at 2:30.
So you can see at least two shows this coming, pretty soon.
You could see both shows three times each. if you wanted to.
I'll tell you what. We'll give you a if you come to the show twice, we'll give you a special tour of the theater.
We will?
Yeah. Connor will.
No, Connor will. Yeah, that's your job, pal.
I'll even throw a toilet in the fire pit.
Yeah,
I'm sure we have one in the props room.
I'm sure you do.
If I could say, we want to make sure if Zach is the director of Toilets and Crescent is listening, we would all like a picture of the toilet, at least, because we're not sure we'll get to see it right away. So.
His wife found it on Facebook Marketplace, so if you're looking for one, that's...
Don't do that search at work.
No. I work for an arts and nonprofit. I think there's worse things.
Oh, you can.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true on that. So, all right, gang, thank you so much for hanging out. And I will see you all in the forest, and we'll see your production very soon, sir.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing everyone there.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Connor says nothing.
Thanks.
So there you go. Yep. Indie Bard Fest is up and running. Troilus and Cressida, October 6th through the 15th at the Cat in Carmel. And As You Like It, yes, I'm in it, at Mud Creek Players, October 6th through the 15th. You can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the other information and the other shows. And we'll do another one with the other productions probably on next week's program. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Let's go around the horn, and then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching recently. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In this weekend, on Screen 1, Dumb Money, followed by Bottoms, followed by Dumb Money. Screen 2, A Haunting in Venice, followed by The Creator. Screen 3, Saw 10, or Saw X, or Saw Twitter. It Lives Inside, followed by Saw. Screen 4, The Expendables 4, and The Nun 2. All of that is at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline, it's a James Wan weekend, a double feature of the original Insidious and the original Saw. So there is that. And, of course, Drive-In Massacre is happening October 6th and October 16th is the double feature Final Cut followed by Slice. So that is happening over there. Over at IU Cinema, tonight at 7 o'clock, Friday, September 29th, Cadejo Blanco, which I had reviewed on last week's program. Friday at 10 p.m., it is the Midwest premiere of Trim Season, followed by High Tension. Saturday, September 30th at 4 p.m., from 1932, the Gene Harlow film Redheaded Woman. Saturday, September 30th at 7 p.m., Cadejo Blanco. Tuesday, October 3rd at 4 p.m., the Zelmer Zilnick-Jorgensen program. Tuesday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. is the film Early Works from 1969. So that is happening over at IU Cinema at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, as mentioned. Tonight and tomorrow, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Nightmare Before Christmas, because it's that time of year. Saturday, October, this is what I'm talking about. Saturday, October 7th at 7:30 p.m., if you're not seeing As You Like It, the silent movie from 1922, Nosferatu with live organ accompaniment by Jay Warren. That is happening there. October 13th and 14th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Sunday, October 15th, 2 and 5 p.m., the show in Hocus Pocus. Friday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m., the mystery, it's not a Mystery Science Theater treatment, but you know it from the movie, This Island Earth from 1955. Saturday, October 21st at 2 p.m., House of Frankenstein. Same day, 5 p.m., Son of Frankenstein. Saturday, October 21st. The Black Cat. Sammy Terry will be there. And hopefully we'll get Sammy back on the show. Saturday, October 21st, 9:30 p.m., Island of Lost Souls. And then October 27th and 28th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., is Little Shop of Horrors, the musical from 1986. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start with Corey, who writes The Craft. It's that time of year. Doug writes the 100th anniversary viewing of Three Ages from Buster Keaton and Go Fish, which is one of my Chicago in film students is writing about. Okay. Amanda sort of went to the library. The live-action Little Mermaid, Valley Girl, Gerald's Game. Ooh. Stephen King's A Good Marriage, To Catch a Thief, Body Heat, The Crossing. All right. Thank you, Amanda. David writes, Plan 9 from Outer Space, Bride of the Monster, some love for Old Bella, and Glengarry Glen Ross. Taylor writes, An American in Paris, Cast a Long Shadow, and Mrs. Skellington. Molly writes, Smallfoot, and deemed it hysterical. JJ writes, Theater Camp, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which apparently is a Iranian vampire skateboard uni. The Saint of Second Chances, surprising doc on Mike Vick, the son of the innovative White Sox owner. So thank you, JJ. Kevin writes, Greaser's Palace, directed by Robert Downey Sr. Ed writes, oh, wow, Ed writes Suspiria. I had never seen it. Remake, yeah, and Sam chimes in. The remake is quite good, too. I've used this analogy a couple times. I like both versions of Suspiria. The original Suspiria is and for me, is like hearing Julie Andrews sing My Favorite Things, hearing Julie Andrews perform My Favorite Things. The remake, which is 2 hours and 20 minutes long, is My Favorite Things done by John Coltrane. It's longer. It goes out there further. Still tells the story, but covers a lot of territory, more, I think, than the original. And both can exist in the same universe. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to be, you know, one or you can all or nothing. You can't, you know, so it's okay. All right. Brian writes, first time viewings, Singing in the Rain at the Art Craft, Traffic, The Premature Burial, and Suspiria. I've been giving my Criterion subscription a workout lately. Ed also chimes in, stop making sense at the IMAX downtown. Yeah, you're right, Sam. He has had a great week of movie experiences. Very good. David writes, Cool Hand Luke, the documentary Side by Side, and Theater Camp, which he had deemed hilarious. Sam Watermeyer, who I just mentioned, The Crow on the big screen at the Historic Artcraft Theater. Look at this. The Nun 2, A Haunting in Venice, Crawl Space, Natty Knox, The Devil's Chair, VHS Viral, The Task, Hostel Part 2, and Rob Zombie's Halloween, which he writes in parentheses, Sue Me. That's all right. Let's see. Jamie writes live-action Little Mermaid, Jack and Kelly Osbourne, Night of Terror, Under Wraps and Under Wraps 2, Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman, House of Villains, and the 2021 Cinderella. Nick Rogers writes, Chud, Expendables 4, The Good Mother from 2023, No One Will Save You, Insidious the Red Door, Reptile, Stop Making Sense, and The Loved Ones. Daniel writes, Clash by Night, Manhattan Murder Mystery, Masquerade from 1965, Secret of Nim, A New Kind of Love, Notorious, About My Father, Cassandro, Sorry Wrong Number, and Out of the Past. Eric writes, his first view, The Original Imitation of Life from 1934, his rewatches, Jeremiah Johnson, The Revenant, ooh, and The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing. I am hoping that wasn't a double or triple feature, Eric. Hope you're doing all right. Craig writes, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Jeff writes, I rewatch Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater. John writes, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. It was. Gary writes, Expendables 4, Star Trek 2 and 3, Biohazard, Prospect, Run Lola Run, Soundtrack to 16, Robin Hood Men in Tights, A Cadaver Christmas, and Body Snatchers. Christine writes, because I brought up Willem Dafoe, she watched Inside. I need to watch it again, I think. Yes, I'm glad you reminded me of that, Christine. So this week, my guys at Golan Globus Theater are doing the William Friedkin film To Live and Die in L.A., which it's fun to hear these guys gush over the film. Yeah, so and Willem Dafoe, William Peterson, music by Wang Chung. There's a few other non-Wang Chung songs I heard in the soundtrack, and I'm going to play that on the Blues House Party very soon. So, yeah, fun Willem Dafoe gifts. So, anyway, back to the list. Kate writes Giant. First time I had seen the whole thing. OMG. Kate, I was very, very lucky in my college years that the Paramount Theater in Anderson, at the time, was going through renovations, and I was able to see on two separate evenings. I don't believe it might have been a festival or a program organized that way, but I got to see two of three James Dean films on the big screen. I got to see Giant, and I got to see Rebel Without a Cause on the big screen. I remember a bunch of us Ball State guys, student theater guys, went down to see Giant on the big screen. So glad you got to experience the whole thing. Adam writes, The Ritual on Netflix deemed it spooky. Lou Harry writes, Curse of Frankenstein, Elemental, Georgie Girl, Ice Station Zebra, and Ocean's 8. Austin, Medium Cool Podcast, Austin Thomas Glidden writes, Reanimator, Pick Up on South Street, Bo is Afraid, Bummerville, which is one of Austin's favorite cinema cities, Air, Bottoms, Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, and Across the Spider-Verse, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, and Creed 3. Rox writes, I'm on a 90s nostalgia kick. Pump Up the Volume and Singles. Yeah, we talked about that off air. It's cool. Helen writes, Sully. Kurt writes, We had Harry and Tonto at Bell Trace on Saturday. On my own, I watched a made-for-TV movie called Special Edition, a mock news broadcast about a nuclear event in Charleston, South Carolina. I saw it when it first aired decades ago. It is still somewhat interesting, available now on YouTube. And I'm glad you got to show Harry and Tonto, Kurt, over at Bell Trace, one of the great Academy Award upsets was the fact that Art Carney won Best Actor for Harry and Tonto in 1974 up against Jack Nicholson in Chinatown, Al Pacino in The Godfather Part II, Albert Finney in Murder on the Orient Express, and Dustin Hoffman in Lenny. And yeah, I had to look up Hoffman. I forgot. I need to watch Lenny again. Anyway, so yeah, it was anyway, cool piece of trivia and great upset. So, and nothing wrong with that. Okay, Linda writes, just binge watched the first season of Who is Aaron Carter on Netflix, deemed it really interesting. And we just got back from the cinema seeing Equalizer 3. Lots of quote-unquote fun. Okay. Holly writes, Don't Worry, Darling, National Champions, My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, The Laundromat, Arrival, and It's Complicated. And writes, I was homesick and had time. I hope you are feeling better, Holly. I can't wait to see your show. So here you go. Ben writes, EO, what a nice little collection of fables with a hyper-realistic ending. Also, downloaded Taxidermia because we should all challenge ourselves as viewers. Thank you, Ben. Bill writes, The Cincinnati Kid and Susan Lennox, Her Fall and Rise. Don writes, Anchorage. Linda writes, Blackberry and The New Little Mermaid. Terry writes, Tales of Terror, The Haunted Palace, and The Raven. All from Roger Corman. Somebody's been on the Criterion Channel. I forgot the algorithms were weird this week, so going back to last week's post where things have happened, Jim writes, Slacker, hadn't watched it in years. Jess writes, Vernon, Florida. Yes, the fun documentary there. Vicky writes, More Than Corn on Who Docs, great story about local farms and how important family farms are. Jay writes, managed to catch Oppenheimer yesterday in the cinema. Kudos to Imagine Noblesville for the small screening rooms they've added. Ray writes, you hurt my feelings. TJ writes, you accidentally left your pointer up. Oh, that's the photo of the wall with no mural. Sorry. Thank you, TJ. Michael writes, 1984, Sherlock Holmes and the Deadly Necklace, Scared to Death, 10 Little Indians, The Kennel Murder Case, The Good German, Invisible Invaders, Dick Tracy's Dilemma, Wagon, Ambulance, and Doc. And finally, D writes The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. So there you go. That's what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. A few other notes. Of course, the Heartland International Film Festival is running October 5th through the 15th. I'm hoping to get somebody on next week's show to talk about the festival. And there were a couple of films I got to watch on video from Cohen Media, the French film Between Two Worlds, starring Juliette Binoche as a woman who takes a job as a cleaning for a cleaning service. And as it turns out, she is a writer going undercover in northern France to write about the exploitation of workers, hearing the workers' stories, seeing the attitudes of the bosses as well as the clients. And, of course, what happens is she builds a camaraderie and a friendship with the co-workers, including one who gets very friendly, not that way. And then we find out what happens when the shoe drops and her assignment is over. So, anyway, good work of that. I wish all workers looked like Juliette Binoche, but she puts in a very good performance as usual. But yeah, that kind of the ethics of what happens when you get close to a subject and what happens when you become friends with that subject and what happens with the aftermath after the article is written. From Kino Lorber, man, a film called The First Time and from 1969. And I got this mostly because Jacqueline Bisset is in it. But this is a film that was trying to cash in on the Graduate, I think, as far as young male seduction. In this, we have three young boys in Toronto, or where generic city, Canada. It was filmed in Toronto as well as Niagara Falls. But three horny young boys on bicycles. Problem is, they're not three horny young boys with cars, and. One of the boys, Kenny, is moving in with his grandparents outside of Niagara Falls, which already adds the storytelling element. And he informs his two other friends about this bordello that he has been going to. He has not. And the two boys wind up coming into town, want to find the bordello that Kenny has been bringing up. And these guys look like the friends of My Three Sons. It has a very My Three Sons look. The director worked mostly on television, and it shows. Music by Kenyon Hopkins. And while they're searching for any place to score with a girl, they go into a bar, a dance hall bar, and see a gorgeous Jacqueline Bisset on the phone and assumes she works there and that she's a prostitute. Yes, it's that level of TV misunderstanding. And she is having some visa problems about trying to get back into the States, and the boys help her out. So the film and the trailer for this film, the film was originally called You Don't Need Pajamas at Rosie's, which is the bordello that the young man had made up. And they changed it to The First Time. And the tagline for the film is, funny, nobody thinks about a boy when they say the word virgin. Yeah, this is a film that, first off, these guys make the boys from Summer of 42 look like hardcore swingers. Director James Nelson, yeah. It's really a product of its time. And if you get a chance, Roger Ebert's takedown on this film is very amusing. Obviously, once Jacqueline Bisset comes on screen, you can't take your eyes off of her, which is about halfway through the film itself, by the way. So, yeah, it's also feels like a travelogue for Niagara Falls because we see the boys and then eventually the boys and Jacqueline Bisset going everywhere, taking the boat rides under the falls and running through town. And, yeah, it's one of those where it's a mainstream film was trying to be edgy and counterculturally, and it felt like an episode of My Three Sons with sex. Well, attempted sex. Wishing for sex. So, yeah, The First Time is out on Kino Lorber. And then a nice little surprise for me, also from Kino Lorber, from 1934, I'd never seen the original, Little Miss Marker. And a shout out to Bianca Slagle, who had the job here at Film Sociology years ago as the Shirley Temple correspondent. And basically, a club owner goes is trying to throw a horse race, and one of the gamblers leaves his daughter as a marker. And, of course, that's Shirley Temple. We have one of the bookies is played by Adolph Manju, who winds up taking the kid under his wing. And interesting to see the kind of 1930s underground shady characters become a village to help raise this child until they can find the kid. She's charming as hell in this, and not in an and doesn't go into obnoxious kid mode. I think this was one of her first films, if not her first. These prototype characters, stereotype characters of the gangster film would do to take care of a kid in their own way. So, but yeah, it was a fun, charming little short romp, and well worth checking out. So, Little Miss Marker is also out on Kino Lorber. As I mentioned, Golden Globus Theater is doing To Live and Die in L.A. This week, you must remember, this was about Boxing Helena and Mulholland Drive. So you go check those out. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's some out there. Hope to see you at As You Like It at Mud Creek Players starting a week from Friday. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!
Hello, friends. Matthew Sosi back here. I'm actually doing a Columbo, just one more thing. Due to a technical snafu, which I'll explain later, I forgot to pay tribute to actor David McCollum, which had a lovely tribute to him on Fresh Air. Of course, best known for his work on The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And because I was staying with my mother-in-law when she busted her wrist, I got to see a lot of him on NCIS. So really, it was fun to watch his work. Now, of course, movie-wise, probably best known for films like, and we'll scroll some more, Billy Budd, Freud. He, of course, was in The Great Escape. Did a slew of television. The Spy with My... Well, there was a couple of the films, episodes of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. that they made into films. They kind of put those together. Screaming Skull, Frankenstein, The True Story, which I remember watching as a kid, Dogs. When he was being interviewed for Fresh Air, it was for the really underappreciated 1990 film called Hear My Song. So if you get a chance, look for that. And, so salute to David McCollum, and, there you go. So we have a little bonus on this week's show. So thank you for listening.